bring in, and they are the late apology from the Honourable MacPherson, and then we have full apologies from
Advocate Albert and due to party business, as well as Mr. Shivambu, who's also attending to party business. Mr. Mishimang indicated that he's on his way, so he's running late, so he should be in the meeting. We did indicate the time.
Having said that, we need to look at the agenda. I think I indicated that there would be a need to process the report today, especially as we had requested a debate on the report itself. And I will be in strategy tomorrow morning to put that position clearly forward again officially, so as well as to indicate the reasons yet again. On that particular note, can we please adopt the agenda? Yeah. Thank you, Honourable Mantosh, seconded by the Honourable Hill Lewis. Can you, you've given the apologies. Right, the consideration of the colloquium report on beneficiation. Now, we have, I believe, the conclusions, which I got myself emailed to me on the, I think it was yesterday, although I had received the report on Friday afternoon. Now, since then, I've received, as chairperson, further inputs, and those inputs come from the DA. That is correct, Honourable Hill Lewis. Right. Now, I understand they are on email. Is that correct? Are they on email as well? They should be, because they were emailed to us. Can you bring them up, please? The email. I think it's these, aren't they? Was this not emailed, Honourable Hilders? It was. Yeah, I think next time let's put them the same way as you would do in the past and just add them so that it's much easier for us to, you know, deal with them, because it now means that Ms. Hurling will have to type them in if we take it on. Have you got a hard copy, Ms. Hurling? Right, and yourself, Ms. Madulani? Thank you. Can you give me just a minute? Now, what I want to do is to go to the conclusions, all right? Now, what I'd like you to assist us with here, the Honourable Hill Lewis, is as we go through our conclusions here, which are on page 23, I think, point 4, if there is any one of your conclusions that would link up, would you speak to it as we go through the conclusion? Do you follow? And if not, you'll speak to it after the conclusions. Are we on the same page there? Right. So, based on its deliberations, the committee concluded that there is a need for a coherent and coordinated beneficiation strategy. And that applies, of course, members, to any one of you who've got something additional to what you see here. Across critical ministries that would provide policy, legislative, and regulatory certainty. When I don't hear or see a hand, it's going to mean we're all okay with it. Are we all on the same page? consideration of relevant legislation and regulations in support of the broader upstream mining and downstream value addition sectors is dependent upon agreement and progress in relation to a range of complex and interlocking policy levers, which are the responsibility of several government departments. These include the following. The mineral beneficiary, the 4.2.1, the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act, and the Mining Charter, which falls under the Department of Mineral Resources. 4.2.2, a review of competition policy with possible amendments to competition legislation, which falls under the Department of Economic Development, as well as industrial financing, which falls under the Industrial Development Corporation and the Department of Economic Development. Agreements and conditions related to infrastructure and development programs and provision, falling under SOCs. 4.2.4, the special economic zones policy, legislation and programs inclusive of incentives, which are the responsibility of DTI. 4.2.5, the designation program of government through the amended PPPFA regulations and the implementation of, by all government departments and entities, particularly SOCs. Did we spell out the PPPFA earlier in the report? Right. Now that takes care of the earlier one, which was the successful implementation of relevant legislation. Do you remember that on the previous page? Are we all happy? Yes, Honourable Luyenge?
Chairperson, I don't know, but I want to propose this thing. Because if I say that it's falling from page 23, ministry is supposed to be capital letter M.
You say that again?
Ministries, 4.1 supposed to be capital letter M.
Okay.
And I want us to find a word on the regulatory certainty.
So there's a need for a coherent and coordinated beneficiation strategy across critical ministries that would provide policy, legislative, and regulate, that would harmonize policy and legislative and regulatory. You know, the issue is, when we say regulatory, I have a slight problem there, because regulation is legislation. We call acts primary legislation. Secondary legislation is regulation. And I often have a problem when we talk of this. Are we doing this because we want it more accessible and the general public don't know that regulation is secondary legislation? If that is the case, then that would harmonize policy, legislative, and regulation. Legislation and regulation. If that is the reason for that. Do we, is that addressing the point you're making,
yes.
Honourable Mkongi? Okay. Is everyone on board? Yes, Mr. Samunga?
I should have just recognized you, but I also want to just say to the Honourable Imam, would you be kind enough to sit on this side, please, where the public representative sit? And thank you for coming along. Your apology was noted, Honourable Maxwell.
Right.
I think I can check. My assumption is 4.2 is addressing issues that certain departments need to look after. My worry is one of the issues that was raised continually in the during the colloquium was the issue of skills. And we don't seem to allocate it to any unit to specifically deal with issues that deal with beneficiation. Whether it's higher education and training, whether it's DST, whether it's mining.
Strategic.
Yeah.
Skills.
Our grandchildren will sit 100 years from now still talking about skills.
You're quite right. It has been raised, and the committee itself has raised this repeatedly, is the issue of skills. I'm sure you will all agree. Honourable McPherson?
Chair, in one of my conclusions, I've noted there that there is a lack of availability of skills to support beneficiation.
What number is that? Would be far
better. It's from under the conclusion input. It is 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
On the DA's
yes.
Subsequent input.
Yes.
Okay. Of course, I know that we initially had this from all of us at one point mentioned, and it has been overlooked in the final input, and this has come in yet again. I don't think there's a problem, it's just where should we factor that in. In fact, it was linked to something much more than that. If you recall, it came up as well with Dr. Horrocks leaving with all those strategic skills. And was there any transfer? You know, what was there coming after? People who leave with all these skills, where it leaves a vacuum. So we need to factor in something that deals with the skills broadly that are required, as well as the transfer of skills when the skills are there within the department, so that when critical people leave, they don't leave this vacuum. Do you remember that issue was raised when he came? So what we'll do, Honourable McPherson, is with the points you've made, also factor in the issues that had come up that day as well about the transfer of skills, the strategic skills and the like. And the whole issue is this, we need to train, that's the vertical side, we also need the horizontal. If we're sitting right now, here, without a critical skill, as we sit here, then we need to bring it in if we don't have it ourselves. And that would be the horizontal input. So we need to address both the vertical as well as the horizontal. Is that clear? Does the DA also agree on that point while capturing the point made? Can we do that? And perhaps while we are sitting, moving on, Honourable McFerlin, can perhaps you can... Right, now I can't see it, so let me turn around. It's not just higher education, training, and science and technology. It's also these apprenticeships, the internships, the in-house, wherever you are, training, we need to put in. You know, all those things, apprenticeships are being brought back. There's internships. There's whether you're on that or not and you come in, you get to go on courses with in-house, as I would call it.
Industry diploma.
education.
The CETAs come under generally higher education, is that right now? Just from a right. Everyone's agreeing. Okay. All right, can we, and as we move, we'll begin to cross off what you put in, Honourable McPherson, from the DA. Okay. We then move through to 4.3 on page 24. The need for harmonisation. You see, now here's where we've got the harmonisation. So now we better look and see what we said in that second one. Because we don't, on the first one. Because 4.1 talks about coherent and coordinated beneficiation strategy. That is what it's looking at. And here you've got more or less the same thing. Can you see that?
Yeah, but specifically, he's talking about the competing priorities between the environment and the economic growth. So that harmonization goes, if you read it in full, he said that in the case of the environment and the economy, harmonization will ensure that laws aimed at protecting the environment do not unduly hinder the growth of the economy.
Especially after the essential oils, etc., on that one. It may be necessary, though, for us to put the two together and not so far apart, so the difference can be, you know, clearly seen. Let's try it. Okay. We're relying on you, Honourable McPherson, to indicate when your issues come up, all right? 4.4. Government through the appropriate legislative mechanisms and informed by the country's developmental imperatives should designate certain minerals for beneficiation purposes. Government through the appropriate legislative mechanisms informed by the country's developmental imperatives should designate certain minerals for beneficiation purposes. I think that, yes, Honourable McPherson, let me just finish the point I'm making and then please speak. I thought, in one respect, this was related to us reducing the amount of raw minerals or agro leaving the country. Am I right? I'm just looking at members of the committee. It was, huh? Okay, if this is the case, remember there were issues raised and we were told that there is legislation, but that it wasn't being effectively implemented. I'm looking at yourself, Ms. Madalani, if that's correct. That there is legislation which requires, before you export raw minerals, you apply. Is that correct? Yes. Now, knowing that, I'm reading this again, you see. Government through the appropriate legislative mechanisms and informed by the country's developmental imperatives should designate certain minerals for beneficiation purposes. So on top of that, we want this, even though that has not been implemented, that law. It is not being implemented as we sit here. Surely there has to be some way we can call for that implementation first. Yes, Mr. Samanga.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The current MPRDA, Section 26, has got that proviso that anyone who wants to export minerals has to get permission in writing from the minister, but it does not speak of the developmental imperatives.
Yeah.
So even if it's going to be implemented, it might be lacking in terms of the scope under which the minister might control, because it's not covered. But the new bill, when it comes into the to designate a mineral as strategic, where some of these developmental imperatives will come in.
So doesn't it mean or call on us to just explain this a little bit better? In other words, to contextualize it.
Okay.
You see, that's what I'm just saying. Now, is it specifically on that, Honourable Nkongi, because Honourable McPherson wants to also speak on it.
Yeah, because what is confusing is that certain.
Yeah.
Let's remove certain and say strategic mineral. You know, because that certain is confusing. Strategic.
Honourable McPherson?
First of all, Chair, that concerns me, that entire section, the whole thing, because it's very vague, and it doesn't speak to who will make that designation, what is involved in the designation. Is it just to say we are focusing on this? Or is it to say, as I know that has been spoken about continuously, about a so-called price discount, which concerns me altogether. But one of my conclusions that I had made and that I had not seen during this whole colloquium is that there was no conclusive evidence to suggest that a discount on minerals would lead to increased investment or jobs. There was no facts on the table that actually, from anyone, that actually said, if we do X, we will get Y. It was all hypothetical the whole time. And so that is why I'm concerned about that, because there is no conclusive evidence to suggest that there would be a result from such a move.
But just before others come in, what we're talking about this here is to say, for beneficiation, that if they designate it before they get out the country, so you've got so much iron ore, before you remove all that iron ore and export it, a certain amount is retained. That's what it's saying, for beneficiation. But it's also calling on the designation of specifics. Now, I had certainly seen very clearly and heard the acknowledgement from every one of them, including Sasol, including the CSIR and others, that in fact, yes, value addition did create more jobs. It did. There was no dispute on that. So surely that addresses the point you are raising. Continue, and then I will take the two other hands, Honourable yourself.
There is no doubt that value addition creates jobs. There's no doubt about that. But what is concerning for me is the designation of certain minerals for beneficiation. That is so very loose and so open to interpretation that is what concerns me. And I'd rather, as we go through this process, be specific so everyone in the economy knows where they stand. So, you know, what minerals? Who's going to designate them? What percentage are they going to be designated to? Is there going to be a cost designation to them? Those are the sorts of things that this lacks, which I think is important, because it's going to be continuing to create a misconception out there about actually what that means. And again, I say that there was no proof put on the table throughout the colloquium that by the designation of minerals that it would lead to X and Y. And if there was, I'd be like to see it, because I cannot recall, and as you know, I've had through that entire colloquium, that such evidence was put on the table.
Honourable Kuhnhoff, followed by Honourable Nkongi.
Chairperson, thank you. If I hear correctly, you know, this specific paragraph talks to the amended Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act. Now, in terms of that, the minister will have the sole discretion to mandate the beneficiation of certain minerals. And I think what we should add is that he must take due care to mandate minerals that will be economically viable after beneficiation. Well, that's important. You know, I think in a discussion there was also the lifespan of certain minerals. you mentioned iron ore.
Yes.
Iron ore is 27 years. So we will be stupid to designate iron ore. Because you can't build the beneficiation industry in 27 years unless we have something already being done, and then you can add that. But just simply to answer, I think we should say that, but the uncertainty here is that act is not being signed yet. And we all know that there is, you know, representations from the Ministry of Minerals, you know, to have some sort of amendments, and from various other sectors to ask the President not to sign. So I don't think we can dodge that issue. And then also the whole thing is also in that act is about the mine gate price. And we should say, we should take due care when the mine gate price is calculated, and it must allow for market penetration. So unfortunately, but it is a little bit uncertain. And we should acknowledge that, because uncertainty is not good for the industry. The fact that that act is hanging somewhere is bad.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mkhonki.
No, thank you very much, President. I think you must agree in principle on the matter. Because if in principle we agree that the imperative should designate strategic minerals that will be economically viable for beneficial purposes, we agree with that in principle. However, other details, when that bill comes back, we are going to effect those things. We can name those minerals that we talk about as strategic in the bill itself. Not necessarily in this particular document, because here we are adopting a report of the colloquium. And I want us to take this debate further. Because if we are saying that the matter of administered crisis is a hindrance in terms of economic growth in the country, and we need to reduce and make sure that the administered prices do not impact on the pace of industrialization. And we know that people in particular that are supposed to deal with that is going to be the state. That is going to incur the cost of the decrease of administered prices, because the ports are the ports of the state and other affected matters. Now, if we say that business should also take responsibility in terms of discounting the way they are making business with our own local industries, and that becomes a problem. And you can see now it's going to be a debate between whether it becomes only the state that must take responsibility to guard our economy, or it's supposed to be business. Because if we're saying that there should be discount prices, that price is going to be incurred by business. And that is why there is an argument that if you do that, it's not going to create, there's no evidence that it's going to create jobs. So you also must read in between the lines what is that argument. So I believe that the minister should be given that responsibility through the bill that perhaps is going to come back to Parliament, and we put that discount. There is a proposal on the table already from the minister. The minister proposed a discount amount. I'm not sure whether you were here. He proposed that amount, that which, I mean, how much can be discounted.
Right, thank you very much. Now, the main thing that's coming out here, which is not being effectively addressed, we have a position here from the DA saying we haven't got it on the table. It's not on the table that by beneficiating certain material, minerals, whatever, products, etc., that this is going to add jobs, and I don't think that was the case, but rather, I think the issue was more the question of the pricing and who will designate. So I want to get very clear from the DA, not a whole input. Are you concerned, you say, about the designation? designate, is that your issue? Or is your issue that it won't add jobs anyway? Because what the ANC is saying on this side is that, no, it's quite clear that this will be designated by the minister. I just want this quite clear here. But secondly, the ANC is also concerned about pricing, but indicating that it wants to include the reality that some minerals have a longer life than other minerals. And therefore, how we designate and what we beneficiate should be informed by the life of these minerals itself. Another issue, I'm not sure which party raised this, was something like iron ore, which is 27 years to go. Well, the issue about iron ore is very simple. Right now we are beneficiating it. We're making steel, aren't we? We're making steel. That's beneficiation. That's the reality. Our issue is not that we're not beneficiating iron ore. It's that we're not pricing it properly for the domestic market. So I don't want us to conflate the two issues. I want us to separate these two issues. So let's deal first with the whole issue of designation and pricing. Right.
Thanks.
So a short bite here, Honourable Mac.
Thanks. You know, my concern is what is designated and why and how? And how do you get to that point of this mineral will be beneficiated and what will the outcome of that? And let me use an example. When I had a meeting with the minister, and we were discussing this issue, and he said, "Well, you know, if we can benefit, if we can discount, designate platinum as a mineral, and if we can get a 10% discount, we can get this much of the world's catalytic converters, or 15%." When I said, "But where does that come from? Where do you get that information? Please show me how you came to that conclusion." And his response was, "Well, he didn't have such, but that they would just come."
Now, just to ask one little thing.
Yes.
The minister may spend a lot of time in the committee, which is on record, spelling out the catalytic converters, which he has repeatedly done year after year. And he pointed out the 10% and why. So it was there where we were all present, that issue. So I think the whole PMG issue is clear. Business itself has spoken on this and is quite clear about that issue. So where are you coming from on this?
My point is, simply put, that there is nothing on the table to suggest why a certain mineral should be designated for beneficiation and what that designation means. What are the consequences of that designation?
The designations are made very clearly to us and their reason. If we designate something, we're able to ensure that X percentage is able to remain in the country for beneficiation and value addition. Now, if you talk to people producing this, they won't argue on that principle. And they didn't argue on that principle. The principle they argued on was the issue of the pricing. That is it. They didn't argue about the beneficiation. Nowhere will you find an argument opposed to value addition or the reality that you get more money for whatever is exported. There isn't anything in our colloquium to that effect. And we must recognize that. Honourable Kornhoff?
President, I think you're quite correct. There is, you know, I don't think we have found out the designated principle of minerals. It's been done elsewhere in the world. And if you designate correctly, it must be a benefit for your industry, and that's why it's in the Act, and there's enough other examples. The point is to designate correctly and the correct mineral. That is vital.
Bunker from DTI.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think probably we might give assistance to the committee in case we get entangled in terms, just on the semantics. I think the higher level concept is to say, if you've got an industry in a country, or if you desire to start a certain industry in a country, what sort of measures do you put in place to make input at high level to your country, I mean to your own industry? Designation is just a word. When we look at other countries putting things like export taxes, other countries actually put in a complete ban on certain commodities. The whole idea is just to make minerals available to your own industry. You make references to 27 years that we still have in iron ore. Actually, for us, it's actually a concern to say what happens after 27 years. So whilst we might say we don't want to designate an industry that is dying, another idea could actually be, let's designate so that we can actually extend the 27 years to probably 40 years, 50 years. So these are the sort of debates that you can actually, where you deploy a measure to achieve a certain objective to help people. So the 27 years is calculated on all going to our current beneficiaries and exporting. Another argument could be, maybe if we designate and control the outflow, the 27 years can be extended to 40 years. And what does it mean for local jobs? What does it mean for local industry? Those are the sort of things that can happen. And then secondly, I would want to just get on the issue that does it create jobs. Let's take PGM, for instance. The fact that we are making catalytic converters in the country, beneficiating using platinum, I think this argument has been made over and over, that it's not because it's got the platinum, because you can put platinum in a tin, carry it around the world very easily. Part of the reason is because we've got incentives that actually attract that industry into the country. So the jobs that are being created are in part because of the conditions that we've actually set, which in effect is actually a reduction in price. If you calculate it and actually it works out to a reduction in price for platinum being given to those who are making catalytic converters, that's why they're best here. Purely for that. Part of the things that they get is they get rebates. So you will find, I remember reading this past week that GM was going to expand the export that it was getting from the exports of catalytic converters from South Africa through Senegal. Part of that is because GM gets rebates, which in effect is cash, which in effect you can actually calculate back as the reduced price on the platinum. If that was not there, it would not be here. So it's probably the evidence does not sit in a consolidated document, but it could actually work around it and actually give you evidence that actually shows that if there is this discount, not necessarily in the price, but in an overall suite of conditions, it actually leads to investment and it actually leads to the creation of jobs.
All right, we're going to be closing on this, Honorable Nkongi.
Jefferson, I've been running up and down because I wanted to go through the presentation of Dr. Paul Chaurta. He came exactly with evidence and is in front of me now. I'm looking at that. You know, that this will create jobs. And if we need to go back, because he spoke about the customizing mining leases to maximize, value addition or beneficiation. He spoke about the question of mining concessions and licenses. He spoke about the protective strategies to grow the upstream, value chain. So these are the evidence that this doctor came with in front of this particular. There were two doctors that day, and they came with two, different issues in terms of what this could do for the economy. So I would like us to refer to that presentation as part of evidence.
As I indicated already, we heard this in the colloquium. I don't think we must dispute what is captured already on Hansard, as it were. By Hansard, I mean we have a recording of it happening. So we need to come back to, a lot of that was on page 11 as well, to come back to the point in question. The designation would be done. Yes, I know that. I haven't forgotten, Honourable McPherson. Is already 4.4, which we are closing on. The issue raised was an objection by the DA. Your final comment on this, Honourable McPherson.
I actually agree with what Mr. Musliman just said, that it can't just be a discount on the mineral, but a value of packages that make the issue competitive. So I agree with you on that particular issue. I'm still unconvinced on the designation point.
But that's what I said right at the beginning. Designation is the issue of the DA. It's not the other things. We've already reached that point. And we're making it clear that the designation needs to be done. It is one of many measures. We're not going to take the measure that is talking about an export tax, I think it is, or whatever. We're not talking about that. We have no intention of, at this stage, looking at that. So we're going to go the designation route, per se. Now, what the issue then remains, Honourable McPherson, is that on that point, the DA would disagree, and we leave it there. We've done enough debate on it and discussion, and the ANC, it would appear, have been unable to persuade the DA on that front. Are there any other objections to 4.4 on the designation issue? No other objections. Right, 4.5. The existence of inherent monopolistic power, especially in upstream firms, linked to mineral and natural resources is a fundamental impediment to industrialization. That is stating a position that was raised by several people who made an input. Right. Don't see hands. Honourable McPherson.
Chair, I certainly don't disagree that there is, forms of monopolistic power that do exist. But I feel that to use the word a fundamental impediment to reindustrialization, it's quite strong language, because going through all of these points and just giving you a broader context, I mean, there's nothing that speaks to about the impediments from government side to reindustrialization, as energy provision, administered prices, port problems, inefficiencies, etc., etc. And I feel like this is, to use the word a fundamental impediment is problematic for me, because it almost bases the inability for industrialization on the private sector, as opposed to saying government also has some role to play in this matter.
I was just raising the issue with Mr. Herman that Professor Turok had made quite a strategic input, which we have, which looked at the role and responsibility, in his view, of the various stakeholders, of which government is one, of course the private sector, other, and so on and so forth. Now, if you've got that handy, Ms. Herling, which you may have, and if you don't have it handy, someone may have it handy, he does look at all the stakeholders' roles and responsibilities. Now, in our first report, which was admin prices are government issues, all right? They're imposed by government. Now, that's already, a reference is there, that report has already been ATC'd, as you know, again. So it's already in existence. But I think let's come back to what we are saying. Your position was the use of the word fundamental in view of that there are several stakeholders at play here. So you may, in just a minute, the existence of that is inherent that in upstream firms linked to mineral and that is an impediment to reindustrialization. What I've also asked the Ms. Herling and our researcher and yourself, Mr. Hermans, to do is to look back at that input and to factor that phrase in about the stakeholders and their contribution and their role. Yes, Honourable McPherson?
I don't have a problem if we use it, to use the words fundamental impediment, but I think let's list the fundamental impediments of this being one such. And those fundamental impediments for we would be, you know, the current supply or lack thereof of electricity. That is a national issue. This is the front page of the business report this morning. It says, Eskom put SA's economy in a tailspin. That was the front page headline. Administered pricing. The inability. I remember the forestry industry said that they, you know, were suffering because of a lack of land to plant feedstock, and that government had reneged on that.
We've already got this, by the way, and I want to just point out where. It's not in the conclusion, right? Let me make this clear. But in our findings, it's very clearly evident. So if you look to the findings on page 23, just above the conclusion, you will see 3.4. Can you see that there? The findings. You see that? So as far as I'm concerned, on those findings that we find there, and you look at all of them there, the existence of monopoly pricing, etc., high, that. That is exactly the issue that we need to factor in. Yes. But then if it's a finding, we need to streamline it for the conclusion. Because in the conclusion, what we need to note are three things. In the conclusion, we were already made aware that some of the constraints that existed earlier have been addressed, for example, to a certain extent, not fully. It's been repeatedly made that the ports factor has been addressed with manufactured goods, but we would like it reduced even more. That's the whole issue on the ports issue. When it comes to the energy, we need in the conclusion to point out, as mainstream has, we had various other forms of energy there, that there is a need for us to factor in alternatives, for us to consider in the immediate, in the current situation, the use of alternative forms of energy other than fossil. So we need, and that needs to come back into the conclusion in that area. We did see mainstream, etc. We're not saying we're going to go with one or two or the lot, but right now, is a need for us to utilize all forms of energy. All right. Have you got that then, Mr. Herman? Well, I'll have a look as soon as you fix it up, Ms. Herman, Ms. Herling. Yes. Honorable Mkongi?
You know, my worry is that we don't know what we want to do here. For an example, where we were discussing, there's something that spoke about is fundamental. There was fundamental.
Yes, yes.
Where is
it? 4.5 should still be there. Just still there.
Yes, because you see, we must not take for granted other arguments because they mean very serious things to different people. And that fundamental for me was very important. You know why important? Because the challenge that we're facing in South Africa is a structural challenge in the economy, which means a fundamental transformation of that structural problem. We have structural unemployment, structural inequality, and structural poverty. And if we want to do that, the question of the monopoly, the monopolistic power is the one that makes that economy not to be transformed. And if we say that we want to fundamentally alter that power relationship, I think we need to effect that. And then we don't want fundamentally to do that.
But Honorable Nkongi, we're not removing it. So I think the point is made. We've factored in other issues as well. 4.6. The DTI and the lead departments identified in the IPEP should develop key strategic partnerships with the developing and developed countries, as well as countries on the African continent, in order to promote and facilitate the benefits. everyone agrees there, we want to go this route, partnerships and so on and so forth. It also welcomes the implementation of the REIPPP program and recent government plans to improve the energy mix. You see, we continue to refer to this energy mix repeatedly in order to secure a reliable supply of energy. Did you put that in A? In support of economic growth and job creation. 4.8, the DTI, together with other departments, should spearhead a Buy South Africa campaign to encourage South Africans to buy locally manufactured products. And I think the issue is this. Is this not what is called the localization policy with respect to products? We want to localize all of the procurement. There's a, 75 or 74% commitment on public procurement. But the issue about apparently saying localization here is the issue around the WTO. So I think it was you who pointed that constraint about the WTO out, Mr. Samunga. Someone did from DTI.
Well, very quickly, there's a protocol that controls the state procurement. I think it's the 1994 protocol, which we did not sign. So we have got the liberty to on state procurement, but we cannot touch private procurement.
I want us just to remember that when we think of just qualifying what we've said there or adding to it. Honourable Koenhoff, Honourable Mkongi.
Chairperson, can I just ask the whole idea of negotiating long-term supply agreements, you know, with stakeholders, local stakeholders, but also maybe for the regional market in Africa and maybe for Europe. Should we put that in? The point I'm making is it not a good point to make that DTI must embark on a process to negotiate long supply agreements for our industry so that if we know if we manufacture, we'll be sold. Understand what I'm saying, but maybe, you know, it's linked to the buy local, but it's also linked to, you know, regional and international.
Honourable
Mkongi? I was asking because as we put that phrase in this document, the one that should spearhead a Buy South Africa campaign, why don't we say it should spearhead a program to support proudly South African companies?
Well, that was the issue I wanted to point out, that the localization issue, we have no problem with the WTO. Localization on a general level, we would have, because of the private sector issue here. So I raised this at the time that there's a need for us to factor that in. The DTI with other departments should, in the first place, spearhead the public procurement support for localization, for locally produced manufactured products. But all departments should promote the Buy South Africa campaign. All sectors of society, all stakeholders should promote. There's nothing in the WTO that prevents us promoting the Buy South Africa campaign. Do you follow? So we want the first clear and the second. Do we all agree on that? So the one, we're not going to break any rules, but we would if we threw in the private sector, unfortunately. But we can at least persuade them.
I'm not sure. Is it politically correct to say a Buy South African campaign or a proudly South African? Because we do have an institution of that nature, the proudly South African.
No, that is the slogan. What is it correctly known as? is it proudly South Africa? I'm looking at everyone. Is it proudly South Africa? There is... That, is that the slogan? What is the actual term? We don't want slogans here. Right, Honourable Maxius.
For me, it's relevant what it's called. Call it the Blue Dog. I don't really care. As long as
we do care. This is an official report.
Because as long as it focuses on buying locally made goods. So if it's by South Africa, if it's proudly South Africa, it must just make reference to buying locally made goods.
That's fine. But now what we're going to say there is that all stakeholders should promote the purchase of goods made in South Africa. All of us, we should all be promoting that. So that while there's no force, there's a promotion. Did you have a problem, Ms. Madalani?
Chairperson, I wanted to explain the difference between buying South African and proudly South African. Proudly South African is broader than just buying locally produced goods. I think the sentence mainly refers to buying locally. That's why it says buying the buying of locally produced goods. Buying locally means to produce goods that are produced locally. Proudly South African means buying as well as other activities that are related to South Africa. So it's broader.
It's more than just product.
Buying is more relevant than proudly South African.
All right. Well, thank you very much. In short, you endorse the revised approach. Saying that the Buy South Africa can refer to technology and processes, it's not simply a tangible good. It's not tangible, it can be intangible. Is that what you're saying? That's what I'm saying, yes. Now what is this report on? That's what you have to remember. What is this report on? Look at the title. So before we just spread our wings, on the colloquium on beneficiation and value addition, is there value addition in tourism? Is there, I'm asking you. No. And if you believe you can win that argument, fine. But you need to know what your report is on. This is what the report is on. You could talk about services.
Well, no one's having an objection. No one's got an objection, so we move.
Right. So, you'll go back and check where Ms. Herling has made the changes. All right. Right at the end. The DTI and lead departments identified in the IPAP should develop key strategic partnerships with developers. Oh, right, we've just done that, haven't we? Yes. We are now on 4.9, I think. And that is, it is of the view that the emergence of black industrialists will substantially contribute towards industrialization and beneficiation. You know what I'm putting here? When I looked at this, this is just a personal view here of the chair, so by all means, raise your issues. It is of the view. What is of the view in the first place? The committee, you know what I mean? Yeah, it is of the view. The committee concluded that it is of the view that the emergence of black industrialists would substantially not in the conclusion, that would have been in the middle of the report, in the body of the report, you see. He did, and in fact, I don't recall the word 100 myself, but other members of the committee may. As long as other members recall that, it'll be in the findings. So let me just check. The findings. Or the earlier comment. Did you factor that point in, Mr. Herman? All right. We'll have to get yourself, Ms. Madalani, if we agree on that, to try and find a spot in the report while Ms. Herling is on the computer. Yes, Mr. Samunga?
Thank you, Chair. I would imagine that 4.9 probably can it out. And actually say the promotion of beneficiation will actually create opportunities for the creation of flex industry.
Just say that again.
Because when we are by promoting beneficiation, we're actually expanding the economy. Mm-hmm. And that will create an opportunity for new players and black industry. Because the way it's expressed, it's like there is some black industries that are going to emerge, and then they will go into beneficiation. But we actually see an opportunity for them to create space where new beneficiaries or new industries will actually come in, and that creates space without necessarily placing people, but it actually creates opportunities for black industries to come in.
Right. You know, I may have looked at this very differently. I accept what you have said. I see that as an additional point, but my own view, and that is like after 20 years, and I don't see a black industrialist. I'm asking myself, so are we only going to get it if we add value? I have a problem. You know, I'm not saying that won't create more opportunity. That's not what I'm saying, so please, let's get that clear. I'm saying there are two points here. The one point is, where are the black industrialists after 20 years? Where are they? Let's just get this clear. Where are they? They're nowhere to be found. Anyway, that is a view here. So all I do want is for members to take, don't collapse them, keep them as two points, and let's hear your comment. Yes, Honourable Matthias.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think the concept here.
My apologies.
The concept is of black industrialists. This concept is rhetorical, like substance, meaning, vulgar in its worst form. Because, for instance, the question we are asking, of the 20 years, where are these industrialists? Don't care whether they are black or yellow or what. Where are they? And what sudden has informed the conceptualization of the concept, black industrial? What has happened to the concept of emerging entrepreneurs? Do we have entrepreneurship, the culture of entrepreneurship among black people? Do we have that culture of entrepreneurship? What has happened to the concept of black economic empowerment, for which would have been a consequence of a culture of entrepreneurship? So I found the concept very rhetorical and vulgar at work. Maybe the minister and the ruling party might bring something very concrete, many something with some substance and meaning, because we need to build a culture of entrepreneurship in this country, and for which it's non-existent. And that's where we need to start, and it's about the curriculum at school level, at university level, and how the new department on small enterprise or small business should of course be focusing on than to think of what is called black industries. Of course, yes, it's a good concept, but it's more of the rhetoric. And can we please get some sense here?
What I'd like to suggest, Honourable Matisse, is that we ask Ms. Herling, to work along something there. We've got the whole thing about skills and that and the next thing. We've got a position here which is talking about, yes, we want black industrialists, however, what are we actually saying? To get a black industrialist, you need entrepreneurs. And to get entrepreneurs, you may need a revision in the curriculum. You know, what are we actually saying here? I mean, if you can work on something there, meanwhile, I'll look at the members, I'll also come to DTI. Honourable McPherson, followed by Honourable Mkongi.
Thanks, Chair. The last point of my submission to the committee on under conclusion read as follows: how does beneficiation empower entrepreneurs? This must be the key result of beneficiation. We should look to create a million entrepreneurs as a commodity we are not short of. That spoke very clearly to the need to have a big focus on beneficiation, empowering entrepreneurs. You know, industrialists are great. You know, if we create 100, I'll be very happy. I'd be more happy if we create a million entrepreneurs, because they will employ 2 or 3 people each. And that should be really the key result of beneficiation, is the empowerment of entrepreneurs. And I think that in the conclusion, if we didn't speak to that, we'd be doing a very serious injustice to entrepreneurs, or would-be entrepreneurs.
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Mkongi.
That we rephrase that. That is my suggestion, that the creation of black industrialists should contribute towards industrialization and the broad-based black economic empowerment. And then we go further, we say SMME and BEE policies should focus on the development of entrepreneurs, providing productive inputs into the real economy.
But in all of the inputs so far, we've got an agreement that, of course, we need black industrialists. That's not the issue. We do. But the other issues, they're deeper. There's the entrepreneurs, there's the empowerment, there's the curriculum which has been added. And of course, there are different forms. Our curriculum is very British still. You know, it is different to even Australia. It's different to countries in Africa. We should recognize that. And maybe that's why they've got more entrepreneurs and things like that. And I just, what I'm going to do is, rather than run round and round, I'm going to ask staff to work on something and we'll come back to it. Are we in agreement with that? You know, taking into account what's on the table. All right. What I'd like to do, members, is I'd like to get to the end of this with the recommendations, have tea and come back, just so that you know how we're planning things. We're going to take out the minutes where they are for the moment. We rather want to continue our train of thought here. Is everyone agreed on that? Agreed, right. Right, 4.10. The existing measures to ensure affordable access to scrap metal for the domestic market should be enforced. This would also positively contribute to South Africa's energy efficiency. I think we heard repeatedly about the issues around scrap metal, from scientists who came to speak to us, academics, manufacturers, everyone said energy uses very little, scrap metal uses very little energy compared to raw minerals, etc. And in fact, it was quoted as only 50% energy. And that, of course, would be a great boost. The reason I thought that here we were going to put this under conclusion but not into recommendation, I thought that our approach not under recommendation per se. So I'm not sure why we don't call for a tightening of measures of this, because there are current measures. There is a current regulation. So I'm looking, it's been pointed out to me that in the findings we've got under 3.5, scrap metal is a direct input into steel making, and the high levels of export has threatened the availability of affordable scrap metal, which is critical for the development of the manufacturing sector. Although the Economic Development Department has created measures to address this, industry has not benefited from these measures. Well, that's a reality, has not yet benefited from it, has not yet. But what we're also saying, and the question I'm asking, are there sufficient other measures we've already got? Let me put it this way. In Japan, they ban the export of scrap metal, and they're members of the WTO. They ban it. Full stop. No debate. So what do we say? You can export a little bit. Exactly what are we saying? Because it strikes me is that in between the waffling around, most of it is exported. That's what it strikes me as. And that is why people will continue to, you know, take, steal, borrow metal, so that they can get paid something. It is a profitable enterprise. So, Mr. Samunga, what does the current law say? That we can allow you to export a little?
Thank you, sir. The measures that are currently in place, which are being administered by ITAC, compel exporters of scrap to first to offer that scrap to local converters at a discounted price before it goes out. That's plain and simple. Yeah, the challenge that we are having is, I can very clearly say, the cooperation of the sector it hasn't happened. There are several changes that they have put in place which continue to frustrate local converters. For instance, when the measures came in, ITAC has to, let's say, inspect what they are going to sell. Part of it is also to make sure that no, maybe copper, whatever it is being included in everything. So way back, you would actually go to, let's say, their premises and inspect a pile of scrap. What they have now done is, if they want scrap to be inspected, they put small piles all over the country. So the cost of even inspection has actually gone up. If you get that consignment, you now they say you bring in your own loaders, you bring in your own forklifts to load it. Don't come during working hours because you will disturb our processes. Things that did not happen before. So the cooperation has not happened. Notwithstanding that they actually took us to court over the matter, the matter is still to be concluded. So the objectives have not been achieved, which were one, for local converters to have access to steel at a discounted price, and secondly, to have access to quality scrap. Because scrap is not scrap. There's quality scrap. There are some things that when you put them in a foundry, they just burn off like paper. So there are things that are happening which are still a problem for us to access good scrap, good quality scrap, and access it conveniently.
Well, I think that's
it's a matter we are still working on.
Because we're certainly not saying that. In fact, we've got a lot of euphemism in that one. Let's just say what the reality is. Because the reality is we're not getting enough scrap metal. Yes, Honourable Mantash.
Chair, for me, if that is the case that the business is not cooperating with what is on the table, why don't we propose the ban of export of scrap metal? Because they won't cooperate. They have not cooperated in the past. They won't. Thank you, Chair.
All right, that's on the table from the committee. Are there any objections to the point made? Yes, Honourable McPherson.
Yeah, completely objects to that. You cannot enforce such a regulation to say, well, you know, you do it in Japan. Japan's economy is far more advanced and evolved than ours is, and to start limiting our options by the ban on export, people just close up shop and go set up somewhere else, and that is something that we just cannot afford.
I just thought it may be worthwhile reminding all members, Japan started off with what we called Jap junk and became one of the most industrialized countries and a foremost economy. Korea started off with Korean junk and now has overtaken the top economies as well in many respects. So I think we must be very cautious here, because there are countries where there isn't iron ore at all, and we've been reminded about this. How do they produce steel? Because they took a political decision. We will. So let us, all of us, just fact the reality into what we say. Yes, Honourable Colonel, followed by Honourable Mkongi.
Can I say that, Chairperson, maybe there is opportunity, but, you know, I don't think there was enough evidence in front of this committee, out of a legal point of view, that we can make that conclusion. So that might just be very problematic at this stage. But there is opportunity. There is opportunity for us to get more, you know, to get the scrap metal here and use that instead of them leaving our shores. So we can rather ask the department to look into that, but I don't think we can conclude that evidence was not there for the department.
Thank you, Honourable Cornwall, Honourable Mkongi.
I would like to support that we get that presentation from the department. But what is very important for me is who stands to benefit from the exported metal. Who stands to benefit? And if South Africa is a country, I mean, is not standing to benefit, I mean, I can go with that suggestion. But you must guess who stands to benefit.
You know, very much like the last colloquium, where we actually acknowledged that there were areas that we needed to explore further. Do you remember I stated this when the new members came in and shared this with you? That's why we had this colloquium, to try and, explore those areas that we have not. It may be the same thing here. We do know that there are scrap metal companies, as I call them, companies which are there collecting it, and they provide jobs. And we know there's that reality. But I'm saying there's another reality, and that is that everyone in South Africa acknowledges we've got serious energy constraints, serious, more serious when it comes to industry, of course. And that anything that would reduce that, such as the utilization of more scrap metal, is to be welcomed, you know. So how do we weigh that up in a balanced approach? I don't like what I see here as a very anemic approach to the matter. If I look here again, let's just see. The existing measures to ensure affordable access to scrap metal for the domestic market should be enforced. All right, are we all in agreement with that? Existing measures. This would also positively contribute to South Africa's energy efficiency because scrap metal uses 50% less energy than iron ore, than the processing of raw minerals. That's the reality. Let's make something very clear and stark here. I think the conclusion should also factor in. There is a need for the committee to conduct a comparable study, you know, there's other countries and what else has happened in this regard. think that's about it. Now, if we can accept that kind of thing, that there is a need for us to pursue this further, to get more information, I think that will address my concern as well. Do we agree with that? All right, can we move on? Based on the presentations from the forestry sector, it is evident that there are significant imports of wooden furniture which could undermine the domestic furniture market. Now, it came to me, and I did refer this to the staff, it's not quite as simple as that. Now, I'm sure some of you don't have this kind of knowledge either, but apparently our climate impacts on the kind of timber that we finally get out. So that certain furniture is produced from different forms of timber, and that the climatic conditions in South Africa are not conducive to this. Now, I asked, I think, Ms. Hurling if she could get more information, or Ms. Madalani. Were any of the two of you able to source more information in this regard? Ms. Hurling?
Chair, it's been included in the report. It's on page 20. 20. Second paragraph,
second paragraph under forestry.
Yes. It's about halfway through beneficiation.
What it says here is that the majority of South African pine, is that it, is used for structural purposes. Beneficiation of imported lumber is high and prevalent in the furniture industry, as the domestic market mainly demands furniture made from high value, subtropical, just the take the other topical out. Oh, subtropical and tropical is a separate. One is subtropical climate conditions, the other is tropical. And temperate wood, hardwoods, which cannot be grown locally at the required scale due to South Africa's climatic conditions. Now, apparently that is a reality, scientifically speaking. Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Chair. There were two submissions that I had made in my conclusions, 1, 2, 3, 4, four from the bottom, that the forestry industry suffers from a lack of land to plant, also known as feedstock, and that the government reneges on IPAP a policy to plant 100,000 hectares with DAP, and that only 2,000 hectares have been done in 6 years. Those were submissions made by the forestry industry in its presentation.
I think most of us were there. Looking at all the members here of the ANC, were all of you there when DAP made its presentation? Looking right from the end to the front, were you there, Honourable Liyenge, at all when DAP made a presentation? I just can't recall who was there on that particular day. Yeah, that's right. Yourself, Honourable Liyenge, were you there at some point for that presentation? The second one. I think it was the second one where the point was made. Honourable Mantash? Right. I can't recall it exactly, but I do recall the issue of land coming up and the feedstocks from all. Now, I don't think it's so much a question of them reneging. I'm not sure if that was that's in italics from yourself, is it? Is that italics, the word renege? I am aware that when the presentation was made by DAF itself, they did indicate to the committee that there was a commitment from government for X number of hectares, and that 5 or 6 years later, only, in fact, 10% or something of this or less had been, in fact, done. and that was due to a number of factors. Part of it was the issue of communal land and the processing required to get through that. Yes, Honourable MacPherson?
Yeah, so, I mean, if we're talking about anything undermining the domestic furniture market, I mean, we used to talk about government undermining the domestic furniture market by not fulfilling its requirements as proposed in IPAP. And you see, and once again, I want to say that, you know, and here's another conclusion, where the forestry sector, and I'm talking about the forestry sector, not that, where the forestry sector in its presentation has made very, very critical remarks about government's inaction on things like water, on feedstock, etc. And here we're just, you know, saying based on that, you know, that we're going to look at, you know, the private sector again. And we must look at the undermining of the market by government and what they need to do to make it better.
I think the thing is more complex than that, because the reality is which forestry acknowledged themselves was the communal land issue. That was acknowledged by them themselves. Wasn't that simple? The whole issue of small growers and the challenges faced there because of that. One had to engage with this and that and the different pieces of legislation. And in fact, we've actually noted that there's a need to harmonize these different pieces of legislation. We've noted that we've got legislation which is not always in alignment with a purpose in one area. The same, of course, applies to water. Our country has a water shortage, generally speaking. And yet, if you look at it, forestry demands more water than most forms of agriculture. That's the reality. So if you have a community that requires water, of course there's going to be, I think, quite a challenge for them to overcome. Do you then agree to the forestry, the land being planted, or do you first ensure the community has water itself? This came up in the Limpopo region where there's some big dam that was built there, and the whole issue was, then one learned that timber required a lot of water use, and the community also required the use of the same water. So it is a challenge that you face. So I'd like us to look at this carefully. I don't think it is that government itself is an impediment or the market constraint. I think there are three issues here. The one, certainly, the commitment, government did have a commitment to X number of hectares. That's the reality. But the constraints on getting that planted were not simply government's refusal. The constraints involved the utilization of water by the forests itself, by trees. The other issue is that the market has been constrained earlier. You don't get the result for furniture in the first year. Once a seed, a tree is planted, you haven't immediately got it the following year for furniture. Some woods take up to 10 years, others take 6 years. So what happened before the 6 years is the issue. What happened then? What happened to timber then? Do you see what I'm saying? So what I'd like is for the staff to factor in the three issues here. Certainly the government did not, and I would like that confirmed entirely, when that commitment was done. Which year was that commitment done? I don't recall that myself, but that the government did commit to planting X number of trees, and in a six-year period, only 2,000 hectares were planted. That's the first issue. The second issue is that the land issue, the legislation around the land issue, and thirdly, the legislation and the requirements of stakeholders to the water issue. So it's not simply, we're going to do this and the community won't have water. We need to factor all of those issues in. So let's flag that one there at the moment. And taking note of what was said earlier, and moving back again to the conclusion. So the forestry sector, we are looking at 4.1.1, okay, it's been flagged. It should have been biannual, it should have biannual engagements with the relevant committees within the economic cluster to monitor the implementation of IPAP. Who's it? Are we saying we ourselves? The committee concluded that it should have biannual engagements with relevant committees within that to monitor the implementation of IPAP. Now that's a very serious point under the conclusion. It has come in part under the admin one before, in which this committee did indicate that it would be of value for us to engage other relevant committees with cost-cutting issues. Okay? Now let's look at your conclusions here, which are not yet factored in, Honourable McPherson.
Yeah, I just want to add in there that, you know, I don't think it should just be up to the relevant committees, but there needs to be an interministerial team, task team, that deals with IPAP and beneficiation if we're going to, you know, because ultimately it's the ministers that, you know, press the buttons on these sorts of issues. So I think that unless Mr. Davies, Mr. Patel, Minister Zulu, whoever else is meeting to on an interministerial basis, I think that as a committee there's only so much we can do.
In fact, if there is such a committee, they do meet under the DTI is the holds the mandate for championing that whole IPAP with various task team leaders, if you like, or champions. So that is currently there. In the previous admin report, you will have that there needs to be greater commitment to value addition. That came, not value addition, to taking cognizance of the admin prices. Okay? So here what we need perhaps to do. There is such a team. All right? There is such a team. There isn't such a committee in operation working. So that's the... This is addressing purely the committee issues, okay, and making a proposal. If you want to make a proposal regarding the ministers, it has to be slightly different because there is such a one in existence, okay? You may want to call for greater commitment. Do you have a comment then, Honourable McPherson?
I just think that it needs to be worded or structured so that it's, I mean, there needs to also be a responsibility from the ministers on this particular issue.
I've just said there is. Well, this is not referring to the ministers. It's referring to the committee structure, you see. That's the point I'm making. So you have the opportunity to come in with something else. Honourable Mkongi?
I think the colloquium at the beginning made that proposal. That we need an interministerial committee to drive industrialization. And we said that should be filtered down also to the departmental, interdepartmental committee and into the inter-committees here in Parliament. So I think it was formalized.
In that respect, you'll bring in that here, that great commitment needs to come about. Did you get that, Ms. Hurling? To get that. Right, Honourable Mkongi can talk to you on the matter as well during tea break. I just want to tackle your other points, Honourable McPherson, which you submitted. Just before that, do you have anything to add, Honourable Mkongi, before we move across to the DA's points?
We finished
the conclusion, bar those two that were flagged.
In the entire report, Chairperson, because I don't know how we must put this thing, we did not capture the importance of other policy documents of government, which other issues were raised. For an example, we said nothing about the National Development Plan. then we said nothing about the new growth path, and you know, which also reinforces the our IPA. So I was trying to craft something.
We're saying that we have flagged a couple. I want to tackle what's here, which is not actually electronically captured all right. So on this one here, beneficiation on minerals is impossible with the current electricity. I mean, that point has come through clearly many times, okay? But the point is we've done electricity. No, we are coming to that. I'm just ticking off those that we've done now. There is no conclusive evidence to suggest that a discount is entry. You've tackled that. Yes, but I mean, you've tackled it, we flagged it, all right? Government's lack of policy coordination, red tape, inefficient intergovernmental coordination does not support current upstream beneficiation projects. Which one was that related to? There is room for lowering of input costs as a form of discount. We've already referred to the previous one and indicated the only one we saw coming down, if you recall, what was that? Only ports. The rest remain. So I think that speaks. Beneficiation is useless unless it is cost competitive. Input, energy, etc. Unless all of it is, all of the costs are competitive. Has that been, and I'm looking at all members now, has that been effectively factored in, the cost of inputs? We've looked at admin prices in a previous report, we saying we concur there's only been one reduction. Is there any other cost? Yes, Honourable MacPherson.
Thanks, Chair. The point of those two, which are very intrinsically linked, is that you can discount all you want on minerals if that's the path that you choose to go. But if your inputs, if your administered prices, of which Port Terrace is just one of many, it's completely pointless. And we have to come to a position where the input costs, whether it is rates and taxes, whether it is energy, whether it is water, whether it is transport, has to be cost competitive, because that will always outstrip any discount that you may or may not receive on a mineral.
You're not giving me anything new. That's what I'm saying.
My point is that that is not reflected in the conclusion that we would believe it should be.
What we are going to be saying, we haven't yet got to recommendations, is that the previous report and this one need to work together. We need to have them together. We've just re-ATC'd the other report, the admin price report. I mean, it's there, it's on the ATC already, you see. And we need to bring that in a recommendation to put the two together. Okay. Right, Honourable Hilder.
I think there's an opportunity in 4.7 to capture the point about energy there. You know, it's important to have a reliable supply of energy, but it's as important to make sure that supply is competitively priced. That is critical. So I think it's possible to capture it in that point, with respect to energy, at least.
On the competitively priced energy, does everyone agree on that, to go in there? I don't see any hands in disagreement. No. All right.
And then while we're just at tea, this longish tea
break, Ms. Hurling, please make sure we factor in that admin report issue, the colloquium, which we've just had ATC'd again 2 weeks ago or whatever, and the two will go together. And the only comment we will make on that is that it did reduce ports costs for manufactured goods, but not sufficiently. That is the only comment we can make there. Okay. Yes, Mr. Munger.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's an input from Honourable which we did not, which we probably have not captured, but I might also propose maybe change. You are talking about long-term supply agreements, but I think think maybe we need to talk about enhancing our trade policy so that whatever we actually beneficiate, we are creating markets to sell it with a special focus on Africa.
Right. I think, Honourable Kornhoff, if you can factor that along to Ms. Herling as well, because you raised the issue of long-term supply issues, because when we come back after tea, we're going to tackle the flags plus that. Okay. Plus, we just need to get to the end of your inputs here, Honourable McPherson. Okay. The DTI incentives for capital investments to support... Which one is that? Oh, yes. Virtually impossible to follow a commodity through its stages of production to final sale. What? Yeah, just expand.
Thank you, Chair. That was actually a point made, I can't remember who it was, but it was made by one of the, could have been the Chamber of Mines, I think, had actually made that point, that it's impossible to calculate that if you use, say, one ton of X, what is that percentage in the final product in a sheet of metal, as an example. And I think that that is a very, very important point to capture, because what the gentleman who was presenting at that time was trying to show, that, that beneficiation through minerals is not a it's not a, an exact science. It's not this easy thing that we make it out to be, and that we need to be very cautious in that thinking by pulling out platinum, discounting it, and you know, putting it into the market, that we'll get this return for it.
Now, while I take your point, I must say, I certainly didn't think it was easy. I think it's quite complex, as everyone has made that point. I mean, the first person to make it was Dr. Paul Jordan. That's a very complex issue, and it was reiterated, but the question is, does it mean we don't do it? You see what I mean? So I don't think any one of them was saying, so don't add value, but rather simply emphasizing that at each stage, like when we saw with the titanium, yes, and it was made very clear that this was at a research stage, you know, the CSIR, remember? And they were still trying to get it commercialized. So perhaps at the research stage, it's a lot clearer to be able to cost it out. Perhaps when it's commercialized, the issue becomes different. And I'm not sure if you wanted that particularly in, because it's a statement that no one, as I say, nobody is saying that we were disagreeing with that. The issue is on value addition, per se. So I'm not just sure what the question is or what the statement really wants to achieve. Honourable Hill Lewis.
I think the core point is this, Chair. To address the cost of the raw material at the first stage of the process doesn't sufficiently capture the complexity of the value chain after that first stage. So a 10% discount at the first stage of the process doesn't necessarily transfer through all the way to the last stage, at which point the higher value added product is produced. Mm-hmm. Because between the first and the last stage, there's an innumerable number of middlemen and suppliers and distributors and semi-value-add processes, etc. It's incredibly difficult to follow the raw material from the mine, so to speak, for example, to the cell phone that gets produced right at the end. And that I think, is the point. There's no guarantee that the discount at the mine translates into a cheaper cell phone.
Thank you, Chair. I think those points are valid in the sense of even our personal experience. I remember before 2010, our call has always been said to me, how can you discount prices for steel? And their response would always be, no, the benefit from iron ore does not really translate into cheaper steel and whatever. But that message changed when actually Kumba cancelled the agreement. And the cost, when the cost plus 3% was taken away, then it became an issue. I think we can address this issue on the harmonization that we're actually talking about. I think there's some conclusion on harmonization that if we make an intervention at any stage, we should actually make sure that right through the value chain, there is a mechanism where we can trace the impact of that intervention. Otherwise, we take it away. So if I can go back to the steel one, there was a cost plus 3%, which the next stage was not acknowledging. And we were asking, do we take it away? So they wanted it in, but they did not want it to acknowledge the benefit of it going forward. So that harmonization should actually address that. But if at any point we are intervening, we have to make sure that the benefit passes on.
Yes, I wanted to say we did get that information right in the admin prices. And we recall that because it was at that time this battle was going on about the Kumba issue. And ArcelorMittal asked the government's intervention in it. And the very reason they put in court papers was precisely that. So, but having said that, I do want to say that when we're looking at there are two issues we looked at when we said value addition. Why are we pursuing it in the first place? Why? Because we have a policy industrialization. Why are we having this policy industrialization? There are many reasons, but three of them are that we believe that it will enable us to have an economy that creates jobs. We will be able to grow jobs with this. We will also be able to effectively increase our GDP and factor in some of those positives into the current accounts approach, and that it will service infrastructure development. So we have that. What the third one though was that we thought when we came into this, that the whole issue of transfer pricing being abused and import parity pricing played a role in all of this. Now, the role that it played, different parties had different views on in this regard, and that's a reality. So where are we coming with now when we say that virtually impossible to follow a commodity through? Virtually, I'm glad we've used the word virtually because it's not impossible. You know, it is very complex, I would have said. It's complex. But the reality is some of the modelling that's been done in our country has been able to do this in certain industries, not in all the industries. We were only given that example by ArcelorMittal, not by everyone else, and that's a fact. So, the catalytic converters, we didn't get that detailed model per se, only with this one. So having acknowledged that you've got a point, but what is the point trying to make? I think what I'm going to ask you to do, Honourable Hill Lewis, with of course the Honourable MacPherson who's noted these here, is immediately after tea to come back with something that adds a bit of flesh to what you are saying. Will you do that? Right. Then if we go through beneficiation, is something that needs to take place across the broad sector of the economy, etc. Also noted that this is taking place. Beneficiation is taking place in a lot of areas. Limited beneficiation, it is taking place, but not sufficiently. That's the reality. And I think that has been acknowledged. The challenge with plastics, as you know, they're saying that where they are beneficiating, it isn't designated, because plastics is not designated. So when you look at it as a piece of equipment, you don't say this has got X percentage of plastic in it. That was their gripe, if you recall, because it's not separately designated. Now, this was the reality there. So the question around plastics was threefold. They weren't getting their raw inputs at a competitive price from Sasol, on the one hand. On the other hand, when they did utilize it, government wasn't buying their product other than syringes, so the factory closed down. And thirdly, what little they are now doing is not being recognized and given about because it hasn't got a designation. Those were the 3 points that Pat explained. And I think we all agree. And we haven't really put in anything under conclusions here. And we should. Do we agree on that? Okay. How does the beneficiation empower entrepreneurs? I think we've dealt with that issue because we said we're coming back to it. Do you remember? We factored that one in. So having done that, let's look at the recommendations on the committee report and then 5 minutes for tea break.
There's one more conclusion that I think
which
needs
one?
To be in. You may have adopted it in my absence, but it's fine. I just wanted to make sure that it is captured. And that is this issue of the labour market. I've put it in the... was it captured? Reflected, I think it really has to be reflected.
Right. Honourable Mkongi?
I can be flexible in terms of that, but we cannot say every report. I think it's some of the reports.
Yes.
Not every report.
Because we must acknowledge there were some strikes and some issues that arose in industry that were given as examples of how there was an alternative to the way Marikana went. You know, I mean, that's the reality. We know that. So let us just keep that in mind. But we are coming back to it all. I'm just looking at this here, informed by its deliberations and the committee recommends that the House request the Minister of Trade and Industry should consider reviewing X. Okay? That's the whole regulatory environment. 6.2, engaging these ministers to ensure harmonisation of that. Are those the only two recommendations we have, plus the one to take together the admin? And I think there are two others. And I want to propose, just one moment, I want to propose that we engage each other over tea break and we come back. It'll allow the staff, who are also having to put together other conclusions, to finalise them. It is now 20 to 12. Can we get back at 12 sharp? 12 sharp. Am I right? Where's the clock? Yes, I've just read the recommendations, but I'm saying that we've got two more that have still got to come in. The one on the two reports, the one that the ANC still has, and you will be talking to them as well, the DA. Yes, but I think I've made it clear, we never have more than three or four. They'll go into conclusion, the rest. And I said that before we finished this report. We don't want a shopping list. Right. Well, we know what a shopping list does to government. Thank you. Let's go for tea break.
Yeah, I think